Hello, space junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We are overjoyed in the Drunken Gungan this evening because we got to see some Star Wars scenes we never thought would be possible in Chapter 6 of the Book of Boba Fett, From the Desert Comes a Stranger. But I can't talk about this level of Star Wars awesomeness all by myself, so joining me is my original Wookiee co-pilot, our very own Dave Filcloney, the man of a thousand nicknames, Mr. Nathan Miracle. Nathan, how are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm so excited to be talking about this episode of the Book of Boba Fett. We get to see the iconic cowboy hat, and it doesn't belong to Dave Filoni. So I'm ready to jump in, but
speaking of jumping in, we
need some more people.
Yeah, we can't really run the Drunken Gungan with just two pilots. It's one of those weird freighters like that. So we've got the third man in the cockpit here, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going, man?
Evening, gentlemen. I'm doing great. It's a Sunday evening and we're recording to talk about episode 6. And oh my God, can you guys, there's just so much good stuff to do it. But not just us three. We also have one other special guest today.
Yes, we had a mysterious bounty hunter of our own joining us last time when we were live, and he enjoyed it so much that he actually asked to come back. I didn't have to beg him like I do with a lot of our other guests. From the Blood of Kings podcast here on the FPN, it's Lee Fillingsness. Darth Handsome, how's it going?
You shouldn't have given up the armor.
Yes. Good times. Well, obviously, we are talking about the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 6, here on this episode. If you have not watched Chapter 6, From the Desert Comes a Stranger, what are you doing listening to us? Go watch it. Watch it like three times. It's awesome. But, you know, just for formality's sake, here is the ubiquitous spoiler warning. All right, guys, we got to see things that just blew my mind in this episode. Chief among them was Ahsoka talking to Luke Skywalker about Luke's father while they were, you know, essentially setting up a Jedi school. Come on, it's like Jedi Nirvana out there, guys. Nathan,
right next to a spaceship commissioned by Luke's mother that we come to find out in the previous episode. Like, how emotional is that?
Yeah, it's incredible. And I do love that Cobb Vanth also noticed the N1 Starfighter and referred to it as though it were like a classic car. You know, is that an N1 Starfighter? Yeah, good times. So before we jump into the five questions, as usual, guys, I'm just going to go around the horn and let people talk about some stuff that just like jumped out at them from this episode. Lee, you're the special guest, so we'll start with you. What were some things that jumped out at you about this episode that won't necessarily fit into our categories from later on?
It will come back in, I'm positive, in other categories, but something that I realized in Grogu's flashback, remembering the assault on the temple. This is what allows that part of the story to be part of the Book of Boba Fett, because this traumatic event in the life of the Star Wars galaxy was perpetuated on, you know, the galaxy, specifically the Jedi Temple in here, by Boba Fett's genetic equal clone brothers and sisters.
Right, right.
And this, you know, that just makes it a huge part of the universe. And it's like, okay, I loved every moment of this. I'm like, but it's not a Boba Fett episode. And then I'm like, this is why it's Boba Fett. This is the other part of the trauma that he's been through that he is in some way a part of, whether he ever took up arms or not. Like, this is part of his legacy, that he's been dealing with this in all the shows so far. And I thought that was absolutely amazing. And like I mentioned with the N1 Starfighter, like, that moment for Ahsoka to look at that and remember, like, okay, this is the type of starfighter that, you know, Anakin, that was his first flight into space. You know, and this was, you know, made by, commissioned by a friend of hers, her, you know, the senator from Naboo. All the memories that seeing that specific ship for Ahsoka, how powerful is that? And then there was just like this little tilt up they did of the camera when she looked up the hill at Luke and Grogu. And it was like so many of those moments where the camera lingered on the animated Ahsoka, where she just kind of had this haughty look where she was trying to seem like she was older than her years. And it was straight out of Clone Wars. It was really, you can tell that they have something really big that they're trying to put together with this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Nathan, there was a whole lot of Clone Wars stuff happening in this episode. Callbacks, mentions, nostalgia, Easter eggs. As our resident Dave Filoni, the guy who is part of the hive mind there, anything that just made your jaw hit the floor or just gave you a smile?
Yeah, there was a lot that gave me a smile in this episode. So I loved seeing Cad Bane. We'll talk at length about Cad Bane. I love getting to see a little bit more of Order 66. So one more little section to put in the supercut whenever we get around to making one. But one thing that stood out to me that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know if Rosario Dawson brought this in or if this was a direction that was given to her, but there's one point where she's standing in a particular way where she's got one arm across her front and she's got her other hand up here like this, and it almost looks like she's looking at her nails as she says something. And that is something that Ahsoka did quite a bit in the Clone Wars.
Cool.
And I recognize just that little touch of, okay, yeah, this is not only a character of the same species, this is the exact same character. Yeah. Down to some of the personality tics and the way she carried herself. So that really put a smile on my face to see them pay attention to that small of a detail.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Derek, we saw things in this episode in live action that, you know, if you had told me 2 years ago, hey, they're going to make a TV show and they're going to do this scene live action, I'd be like, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. What jumped out to you?
I mean, just everything. I mean, it was a phenomenal episode, obviously. Just a lot of great scenes. I mean, the fact that they were able to bring, you know, Luke Skywalker back yet again, just everything overall was great with it. So, you know, can't really say too much other than it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me, the big thing, and I actually posted about this over on the What a Piece of Junk Facebook group, it was watching Ahsoka's reaction to receiving that chainmail shirt for Grogu. First of all, I'm so glad we got to see what was in that package because it'd been killing me for a week. What present did they make for the baby? But I liked seeing Ahsoka's reaction. I almost feel like she knows that the Beskar for that shirt came from that spear, you know, that was involved in the duel that she had in season 2 of The Mandalorian. That look on her face kind of tells me, because she lingered on her hand after touching it. We know that lightsabers are basically force-sensitive objects, as are holocrons. Guys, do you think that the Beskar has some sort of resonance with Jedi, especially because of the way that Beskar interacts with lightsabers? Lee, what do you think?
I think it has to be something special. You know, the way that everyone responds to it, you know, and who's going to, you know, among the Jedi, who's going to know more about Beskar than the Jedi that spent arguably the most time with Mandalorians?
Mm-hmm. Outside of Obi-Wan.
True, but that was a lot of pillow talk, and not necessarily with the warrior cast of Mandalorians.
No.
Yeah. Nathan, what do you think? Beskar resonance with Jedi or just Force users in general?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the lightsaber, when you think about it in real world terms, makes absolutely no sense.
Right. Just ask Disney's Imagineers as they try to make a real one.
Exactly. So there's got to be some sort of Force something in play there, especially because when you construct a lightsaber, you do so by using the Force, and the Force is a connection to that lightsaber. So I don't see why that would be limited to lightsabers. So I think this is the first time we've really seen it happening with something other than a lightsaber, but it makes sense. It's a logical progression of, okay, if lightsabers are an item that can be imbued with the Force and you can, like Rey did, as soon as you touch it, get visions from the Force, why can't other items be the same way? And especially with Beskar being kind of the counteracting thing to lightsabers, it makes sense that Beskar would have similar properties.
Cool, cool. Derek, your thoughts about the whole Beskar sensitivity thing? Is it the new Cortosis?
Well, my problem is, though, is I just find it's so, I don't know, almost to the point where it's being overdone now. Because to me, it's like, okay, where was this for the past 20 years, you know? And I get it, but they've made it way too, I don't know, too much in my opinion. So
Too prominent of a connection?
Yeah, just the fact that, like, why wasn't this, like, ever brought up, you know? Because it's not brought up in anything, even in the sequel trilogy up to this point, right? So now all of a sudden there's, like, you know, this new fancy thing. And, I mean, you just would think that to be honest, why would the Empire not build everything out of Beskar then?
I mean, that would be a great plan, but I mean, there are probably a couple of answers to why that couldn't happen, but they'd all have, like you said, they all have to be some kind of retcon right now, because the term Beskar, like, we didn't have this before, right? Yeah.
We did. It came from the Karen Travis novels, originally the Clone Commando novels, and then it carried over actually into the, what was it with Jason and Jaina Solo, where Jason went evil? She actually went to...
New Jedi Order, right?
Yeah, she actually went to Mandalore, trained under, I think, Jank Skirata, one of the others, and actually got some Mandalorian gauntlets to... in order to fight Jason Solo. So, and they had been talking about Beskar back then. They even had a few ships made out of Beskar that were pretty indestructible that joined forces against Jason Solo.
Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting. I was going to say, as far as force imbued objects, didn't Darth Nihilus's mask have that kind of thing back in the old EU? Does anybody remember that? Like, if you touched his mask, you could get those visions of what he used to do, and there was a chance that he would, like, possess you? Or am I thinking of a different Darth?
I mean, could have. I mean, it's the EU, right? There's 25 years
yes. worth all of kinds of stuff.
I'm sure some of us not even read, right? Because we didn't even know about the Beskar there. So,
yeah. Anyway, I get your point, though, Derek. It's definitely a new thing that they're trying to act like has always been a part of the Star Wars galaxy.
And I think it's just too powerful. You know, to me, it's because, again, why would the Empire purge it? And I mean, I get it. They took it, right? And that's the whole point in season 1/season 2 of Mando, when he gets the, you know, Cantona of Beskar and everything. But to me, there should literally be an entire vault somewhere, the Empire, that has of this stuff. Right. So
maybe that's one of the things in the vault help me out, guys. Mount Tantus. Maybe they have a bunch of Beskar, and maybe one of the reasons that Palpatine wanted to keep it out of circulation is it was the way to stop Vader, and Vader was his chief enforcer. Maybe he doesn't want anybody to have a way to stop Vader.
Well, other and than the, him. The Beskar that they made Mando's armor out of was Imperial stamped, so they do have Imperial stockpiles of this somewhere.
Go ahead, Nathan.
I assumed that Beskar is also extremely rare. It's kind of like the vibranium of the Star Wars.
Mithril.
In this case, literally with Grogu's shirt, right?
That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, he's getting a Mithril tunic. All right.
So I was under the impression that it only came from Mandalore or Concord Dawn, and thus you really couldn't build entire fleets of ships out of it because there's just not enough of it in the galaxy. I don't think even all the Mandalorian armor is made out of Beskar.
No, there's no way.
When Paz Vizsla fights against Din Djarin, you know, he's got that shield that he uses so that he doesn't get hit by the lightsaber. I don't think that his armor is Beskar.
Or at least not all of it.
Right.
There is a real world parallel to Beskar. Two of them, Damascus steel, which is kind of was a lost art until very recently somebody figured out the exact silica compound that makes it. And when you look at the Beskar plates, they look like Damascus steel. But the other one is Tamahagane, which is the traditional steel that you use in Japan to make katana. And it's actually not steel, it's pig iron. And steel is basically, you take iron, you heat it up, you add a whole lot of oxygen, that bonding process creates the steel, and certain iron from certain areas is more desirable, all sorts of stuff, but it's also the forging technique that is a guarded secret. And so having ingots of Beskar made in this traditional manner that nobody would know how to do, which could be why the armor is such a revered person in the Mandalorian culvert.
Right.
That technique and that know-how could be, you know, it could just be any iron, but having made Beskar is what makes it special.
Yeah. Hey, Nathan, it's the riddle of steel.
It is.
Or vibranium.
Yes, or vibranium, right, or adamantium, unobtainium. But speaking of unobtainium, I actually think that there's one more reason why Palpatine might not have been keen on circulating it, and he hoarded it and had that imperial stamp on it, is because dunium, I think it's dunium, is the metal that the Death Star was made out of, is like a big political play thing in some of the current novels where people that manufacture stuff with that metal are constantly trying to get the Empire to use more of it as like a, you know, economic play to make their companies richer from the Empire purchasing all that dunium. So,
like the U.S. and oil.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that also, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but doesn't Admiral Price or Governor Price mention that during Star Wars Rebels? Because her family is a metallurgy family. Their corporation is rich from selling metal to the Empire. It's either in Star Wars Rebels or it's in a book where Admiral Governor Price
probably
is.
in the Rebels one.
Now Price does in the Rebels talk about how Lothal is providing resources for the Empire. I don't know if that was the particular resource.
If it's about her family, it's in the novel.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Anyway, but yes, that point being, perhaps, yes, Beskar would have been a better choice, but some political wheeling and dealing happened so that Palpatine chose a different type of metal because of, you know, favors and cronyism.
I mean, we know the Empire is more than willing to put less than perfect armor on their stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. Captain Rex talks about how their stormtrooper armor is just worthless. Yeah, the clone armor was excellent. So yeah, they definitely cut corners.
It's an interesting parallel too that Beskar and Kyber are like basically they destroyed the planets where you could get a lot of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was going to be my comment. To me, it's like if potentially at this point the only place we know you can get Beskar is from Mandalore. Like, why wasn't it always like in war, right? Mm-hmm. Because there'd be so many people trying to get Beskar at that point because it would be so valuable that the planet would never not be in war, not even just amongst the Mandalorians themselves.
I mean, it's Mandalore. They pretty much have been at war forever.
Yeah, that's almost correct, Derek. They fight a lot. They're the
But that's themselves though. I'm talking about outside. Like I'm not saying that they didn't have outside, but there's not as much. Like you would think there would literally just be like the Empire coming to destroy them many moons ago, or even the High Republic or Separatists or anybody, right? That's all I'm saying. Like, internal is fine. Civil War, I get that. But to me, their entire planet would have been just a hot spot for people trying to come just to get a little bit, like you said, because it should be super valuable.
Yeah. Although, I don't know how useful it is outside of the specific purpose of armor and some weapons.
Well, it repulsed blaster rifle, right? I mean, whole Republic, that stuff would have been crazy, right? I mean, that'd be so valuable because back then you had a gazillion Jedi running around.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, maybe we'll find out more about the history of Beskar in some of the upcoming series that are set further in the past. Possibly. Okay, well, before we keep going down all those rabbit trails, let's go ahead and... no problem. I brought it up because there's so much to talk about with Chapter 6 here. But let's go ahead and do the five questions. So here we go. What was your favorite part of this episode, Lee?
You know, I just got to say, Timothy Oliphant, Cobb Vanth. I am a huge fan of Justified. I'm a huge fan of Deadwood. He is basically playing Bullock and Raylan Givens at the same time. Mm-hmm. And such a... fantastic job. You could not ask any actor right now to be a better, you know, quick draw, smart talking Marshall.
Yeah.
The power of it You know, just that first scene with the Pikes. I knew you were the smart one. You know, everything from over there to everything over there is the Mos Pelgo territories. Now, yeah, anyone gets lost stays lost forever. Like,
right?
He's got that hard edge back. You know, the way he's joking with Mando, he's like, you know what I like about you, Mando? That smile. You think you can get away with anything?
It's like, what?
And at the best one-liners.
Yeah, and I mean, come on. We finally get Cad Bane, one of the best bad guys, and honestly, canonically, a better bounty hunter bad guy than Boba Fett ever was.
Yeah, and as far bringing, as on-screen antics, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that we now have established bad blood between him and Ming-Na Wen's character. I blanked on her name for a second. Fennec Shand. We have that established in the Bad Batch. We have, you know, established bad blood probably with Boba because he's going after his little sister. You know, there's a lot of ways that can go. So and of course, just being a huge Justified nerd, it's a happy day for old Lee.
Cool. Excellent. Derek, what was your favorite part of this episode?
So it was definitely, seeing Mark Hamill again, reprise the role of Luke Skywalker, the portion of Ahsoka as well. And like I said, that part where she tells Luke how he reminds her so much of his father, just like really struck me, because it's kind of like almost full circle again, right? We've talked about this many times, but you know, just with the Ahsoka character and what it means, and who knows what they're going to do with those central characters, right? Mainly between Ahsoka and Luke. I mean, Grogu, you know, we'll get into that in the discussion here, you know, what he's going to decide on. But at the end of the day, just that whole portion, the whole training scene, you know, because that is some of my favorite portion of The Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just, you know, overall, it was kind of funny, you know, it's like, both times Luke's having to carry them in the backpack, but one was the teacher and now one's the student. So, you know, but just overall that whole portion, you know, as we know why they hired, what's the deep fake artist, Mookie?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so the guy who was on YouTube saying this was cool, but it could have been a lot better like this. And, they're like, would you like a job? And he's like, yes, I would.
Cause we need him. Because now I'm kind of sad because, like, well, do we still get Sebastian Stan down the line, or are we just going to get deep fakes the rest of our life? Which is kind of like, I don't know if I'm one way or the other, but I mean, obviously it's going to suck for Solo. Alden Ehrenreich. Yeah. It's going to suck for him because now they can just deep fake Harrison Ford on everybody's body. So,
I'm still expecting to happen in next week's episode of Book of Boba Fett. Maybe. Just going to go on record. I'm still expecting it.
But overall, though, I mean, it was obviously a lot better. Well done, too. I know Lee wasn't a fan of the voiceover portion. It was still a little. You could tell it was a little shoddy. But but overall, the graphics themselves was a lot better.
Cool. Yeah, the training scene's a beautiful thing. Nathan, what was your favorite part of Chapter 6?
As much as I loved the training scene and seeing Luke and Ahsoka and Grogu and Din and all of that, I forgot all about all of that the moment I saw that silhouette, the stranger coming out of the desert. I saw that, I just immediately stopped. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's no way. Is this who I think it is? And sure enough, it was. And when Cad Bane raised the brim of his hat and we saw those glowing eyes, that was my single favorite moment of the entire episode, possibly of the entire series so far. Cad Bane is such a great character, and to see him come into live action and to see those glowing eyes, it's quite a bit different than the normal Duros eyes. We actually had Duros way back in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
That species was seen in the cantina. But you know, at that time, they didn't have the technology or the budget to make them the way they made Cad Bane in this episode. And the teeth, those sharp teeth, very, very freaky.
Yeah.
Loved it. I loved everything about Cad Bane's appearance, everything he did. I love the fact that he shot the sheriff, and then he shot the deputy.
Well, he's got one up on Marley.
That's exactly. Right. Like, yeah, I didn't stop at the sheriff. I got them both. As a matter of fact, that deputy is dead.
Sheriff D-E-A-D, dead.
Sheriff took out his shooting arm, but
yeah, he's not dead.
Yeah, he's yeah. There's no way he's dead. But yeah, pretty much any moment that Cad Bane was on the screen, that was my favorite moment of this episode.
But were you disappointed, Nathan? There was no Toto.
No. No, I was not disappointed by that. I'm not convinced that there is no Toto. Toto often stays back in the ship. So, you know, he could still be out there. Interesting. He might be
blessing the rains down in Africa as well.
That's true.
That's true.
True. Blessing the rains down in Tatooine.
But Seth Green's not that good of a singer.
But I did notice that Cad Bane did not have his rocket boots.
Hmm. A toothpick.
Yeah, but I mean, the toothpick I don't think is as big of a deal as we could possibly see sometime in the next episode, a moment where it would be really helpful to have those rocket boots, and he doesn't. Mm, and
good
and
observation.
I don't know why he doesn't.
Yeah.
Or well, maybe he just switched them out so he didn't get sand in them.
It's true.
It gets everywhere. Rough,
of course. Gets everywhere.
Yes. Well, for me, my favorite part of the episode was, as Derek said, the whole training montage. Oh my gosh, putting Grogu into the same backpack that Luke had used on Dagobah. So great. But just most specifically, watching Luke teach Grogu how to more connect with the Force and let it flow with you instead of trying to use it in manipulating things. So when Grogu was doing the little balance number on the branch above the river, and then also when he was in the backpack, and the two of them just kind of floated their way up the bamboo, as it were, and like just took in the serene nature and just that planet teeming with life. It was a beautiful scene, and it perfectly illustrated what I hope will be a difference in training technique that Luke uses for his students. But I think this also gave us a little bit of foreshadowing of Luke's not super great at teaching people how to be Jedi, because a lot of the techniques that he was using to get through to Grogu were just kind of brute forcing the lesson onto Grogu, especially with that training remote when it kept blasting at Grogu and then trying to get him to jump with the Force, you know. So
it's his first student.
It is his first student, and so, you know, what was the joke about first one's not so easy? People were talking about how Obi-Wan didn't do so great with his first Padawan, and now Luke is feeling the same way, you know. Yeah,
maybe. I mean, we know Grogu at least doesn't kill him, right? So
right, that's true. So that's a plus. Yeah. But I think we've also seen, you know what, we'll get to that segment in just a minute here. So let's move on to a little bit of the other side of the coin. What was your least favorite part? Derek, we can start with you this time. What was your least favorite part of the episode?
It's just a small nitpick. And really, it came down to the mask of Cad Bane. Mm-hmm. I get it. We've had CGI so much, but they just made his head way too big. Now, granted, if it was based off of what we saw in the original Star Wars in the cantina scene, it fits it better. I get it. But it just seems so and like you said, and his teeth were really far apart. It looked menacing. Don't get me wrong. But it didn't feel the same way that, you know, I was accustomed to seeing Cad Bane for so long. It didn't look as slick. So like, you know, when you see the portion down when he's got his head down, you just see the top of his hat. It looked fine. But like I said, once it got up and you saw the eyes and the actual teeth and everything, it just didn't fit right for me. And that was just the only nitpick because it was such a great episode.
Yeah, cool. Lee, what did you dislike about this episode?
Well, as has been pointed out, I really did not like Luke's dialogue. It all sounded like voiceover instead of dialogue, what we call wild sound. In the industry, it's like, yeah, you use a boom mic or a lavalier, but you're picking up everything else around it.
It sounded like ADR.
Yeah, and you could also tell that it had been constructed because there were no highs and lows. There wasn't like the personality of Mark Hamill being injected into that voice. It was very even and it sounded like him, but it did not sound as him, if you follow my meaning there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
it sounded like a simulated Mark Hamill, not the real Mark Hamill.
Yeah. And then, what was the other thing? I'll save it for later.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Nathan, what did you dislike about chapter 6?
It's the exact same complaint that Lee had, hearing Luke and his dialogue. There were moments, where I'm sure Lee caught more of it than I did, but there were moments I'm like, this didn't quite sound like a human talking. Yeah. I think that's exactly what it was. They used a program to generate the dialogue based on things that Luke, or rather Mark Hamill, had said that they had recorded, but it didn't always quite fit. And there were definitely times where, you know, it seemed like he should have been raising his voice or talking more emphatically, and he just didn't. He was just that almost monotone the whole time. And I didn't really like that. It was fine for one episode. I would not want to see a whole series or a group, even a group of episodes, with that style of dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, this is super nitpicky, but hey, that's what we do. I didn't like the dichotomy between the ant droids and R2-D2. I loved seeing R2-D2. I loved seeing him with the little satellite dish beaming up coordinates for Din to fly down into the correct area, at least the correct area where Luke and Ahsoka wanted Din to land. Although I'm not sure that Luke knew Din was coming. It feels like Ahsoka knew he was coming somehow, and R2, obviously. But I'm not sure that Luke knew because he didn't talk to him directly, and then after Mando left, he was all like, the Mandalorian was here. Like that was some sort of, you know, news update to him. But what I dislike about the ant droids and R2 is after R2 had guided Mando to the spot, R2 shut himself down, which is still weird to me because he never does that in, other original trilogy or prequel trilogy era stories that I can think of. And I was trying to justify it that Luke doesn't want this planet to be found. He wants to keep this a secret. So as few power sources as possible for tracking, but that doesn't jibe with all the ant droids building the structures. And ant droids in general bugged me because we hadn't seen them before. I don't mind new droids, but it's weird that Luke is getting technology to build the Jedi school. I kind of wanted to see a cool, I'm Luke Skywalker and I'm going to build these buildings with the Force, you know, whoosh, levitate all these rocks and build a tower in like 10 seconds. I don't know. The android thing just seemed way out of place, as did R2 powering himself down. So that's the thing. Yes, Derek.
So the one thing with R2, which I think this is what correlates it. So we know R2 is like, I don't know how much older than C-3PO, but we know he's older.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
To me, when we get to the sequel era, what happens to R2? He's like shut down basically, right? He's old. So that's the interpretation that I had, that it's like R2-D2, it's getting old. And now he's like the old man, right? He gets to that point and he's like, I'm going to take a nap now.
Yeah. His battery at 100% is now only still like 2 hours.
It only holds a charge for like 30 minutes before he has to recharge, right? So how I was interpreting it.
And we do have 3PO taking a nap in episode 4.
We do. Yep.
Yeah. So, he says, I'm going to shut down for a while. It does that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the rat catcher droid turns himself off when he's fighting Boba Fett. So, you know, it happens. It's just weird, though, that I guess it was R2 saying, hey, Mando, nothing important is going to happen for the next 3 hours. So, you know, let's cop a squat.
I have given the orders to the ant droids. They're going to do their thing. Mm-hmm. Good night.
Right.
I'll also say to your point about the ant droids building the temple, It's one of the things, like I actually talked about this on a different podcast, when actors do their own stunts, that is a complete ego thing. It is like one of the dumbest things that an actor can do. Speaking as an actor stuntman, there's nobody that can double me because I'm enormous and very odd looking. But that said, if Luke is training Jedi, building the temple isn't something that he should be doing.
Okay. I mean, I get that, but like Grogu's the only student. Ahsoka's there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could have. Yeah. He could have been like, hey, Ahsoka, sub for me in class today real quick. I got to go build the temple, you know. But
apparently he's got unlimited resources because he had like 5,000 of those droids.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure he's being backed by the Republic at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, he could also be asking Ahsoka, hey, while I'm training Grogu, you can also use the Force. Can you, you know, lay down some rocks for me?
It's like, and plus, you're one of the few people that knows what these should look like because you were alive the last time there were Jedi schools. Anyway, okay, moving on. Question.
They should be about 5 miles high.
Right.
Or in the ground. In a mountain.
Right. On the most populous planet in the galaxy.
Now, surely there was more than, you know what, we don't have time for that discussion. Okay, so what connections did you see to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy? Derek, what connections did you see there?
I mean, it's just full of it, right? I mean,
yeah,
we've talked about it. So. no, but I did, we'll visit Cobb Vanth a little bit just because I haven't got to talk to him. Obviously, he better not be dead because, yes, we need more Timothy Olyphant. And Cobb Vanth can't go out with just a shoulder wound. Come on. So, and so there's that point right there. But yeah, just the whole opening scene, more with the Pikes, right? So we're seeing how we're getting the Pikes running into the territory and he's playing the marshal. He's still true to his character, right? Because he could have had the spice and taken off, right? He kicked it over, which was great. But then you see the townsfolk people, right? So the townsfolk people didn't want to partake, but now that they shot the sheriff and killed the deputy, that they're all going to come in. So we definitely will see that if this final episode here is the final climactic battle, we'll see all the people come to help. You know, it'll basically, like I said, be like the Red Dawn morning from the Rohan. And, you know, King Theoden will be giving his speech. But it'll be Cobb Vanth. It'll be the Jawas. You know, it might be Amy Sedaris. You know, we're going to see a whole bunch of people.
Right.
So all right to save Boba Fett and Mando. So.
Now, see, I thought you were going for a different Lord of the Rings reference there, because now it sounded like you're talking about when they were in front of the Black Gate and Aragorn was giving his speech and whatnot. Oh,
for Frodo?
But
for Boba or Grogu?
But
speaking of, didn't Cad Bane look just like the mouth of Sauron until he lifted his head up? Like that mouth was straight up.
Yeah. Okay, Nathan, since you're already on the topic here, other connections to the Star Wars galaxy?
Well, clearly we're just connecting it to Lord of the Rings. So
obviously, with the mithril shirt and everything, right?
Gandalf and... Oh, wait, no. I mean, throw a dart at this episode, hit a random screenshot, and there is something that relates to something else in the Star Wars universe. I think the big one for me is Luke says you can't have any attachments to Grogu. He's teaching that. This, despite the fact that his attachment to his father is what saved the day in Return of the Jedi. So clearly he's bringing in some of the old Jedi ways. And I think he's done some research or he's talked to Ahsoka and said, oh, well, you know, if the Jedi did it this way during the Republic, that's what we should do. I think that is leading his character to the point where we see him in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Because in The Last Jedi, he talks about, oh, well, I bought into being Luke Skywalker Jedi Master, being that legend who saved the galaxy and brought the Jedi back. And he's doing some things that we've talked about before. The Jedi did poorly. The Jedi did let Sidious rise to power. The Jedi did basically create Vader by forcing Anakin not to be able to talk about his relationship with Padme. The fact that he had to hide that is what led him to the overreaction of trying to protect her that took him to the dark side. So attachments aren't bad if you, you know, treat them correctly. But Luke is going that direction. I think that's what's leading him to The Last Jedi.
Yeah. I think for me, Derek, you've got the Cheshire Cat over there.
All I was going to say, it was funny because Nathan points that out, but then at the end he says, but here's Yoda's lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It made no sense, like no attachments, but yet here's your, former, who knows what lineage they're linked, right? But it's like, here's Yoda's lightsaber that I've been carrying around for all these years.
Yeah.
Yep.
He is being hypocritical.
Yeah, he's already on that path of hypocrisy of all, do as I say, not as I do, right? And I think that for me, the big connection was Yoda's lightsaber, but just in that way that you just talked about, Derek, is that connecting him to the old Jedi Order that did everything wrong. I think that we're going to see, if not, definitely not in the Book of Boba Fett, in some other series or story, maybe a comic book or a video game, or maybe they're going to make a movie. I don't know. At some point, we're going to see Luke Skywalker discover what happened with his father and the Jedi Council, because he knows that Anakin becomes Darth Vader, obviously, but I don't think he knows all the specific details of what happened at this moment in time where we see him in Chapter 6 of the Book of Boba Fett. And I think between now and the time that we see Grumpy Old Man Luke, he's going to find out what happened, find out that the Jedi created Darth Vader, find out that they let Darth Sidious rise to power, et cetera, et cetera. And that's going to be this big moment of, well, what the – guys, I've been dedicating my life to your philosophy – and you're really just full of it. You don't even follow your own rules. And then that will cause him to deal with all that stuff with Ben Solo in the bad way. Or even he might not find out about all that stuff until after what happens with Ben happens. And so he goes off to be like, oh gosh, the Jedi Temple's been destroyed. My students are all dead. My nephew is now like headed down the dark side path, and he goes to consult Yoda or Obi-Wan, Force Ghost, etc., and he finds this old Jedi trove of knowledge, reads up all the things that happened, and was just like, holy crap, this is a bunch of garbage. And that's when he goes off to Ahch-To and is like, I can't take it anymore, mm-hmm. And so we'll get to see that almost hero's journey in reverse, like we did with Anakin in the prequel trilogy. It's like poetry, it rhymes, Star Wars ring theory. And he'll be sort of going from pinnacle of awesomeness to, oh gosh, I realize that everything I've tried to believe just can't be done. He loses his faith, and this is not the way, right? This is not the way of how we should be interacting and relating to the Force. So that big connection is Yoda's lightsaber, but also the whole history of the Jedi.
Well, and it'll help in the conversation, too, that we get with Yoda and Anakin. Or not Anakin. I mean, sorry. Force Ghost, Yoda, and Luke that we get in The Last Jedi, right? It'll make more sense in that conversation piece because that was the whole point, right? He's talked about, I've done the books. I've done all this. And then Yoda's like, that's all full of crap. So,
yeah, because Yoda has ascended to enlightenment as Force Ghost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and he learns that when he's in Dagobah, right? He's had, 20 years to reflect on it, right? So, and it's kind of the same thing Obi-Wan. They all kind of realize while they sit in their hermit solitude that, we darn effed up, and this is probably why.
Yeah, yeah. That disillusionment with dogma that is happening for Din over in The Mandalorian.
And that's probably why those two, besides Qui-Gon, are actually the ones that are able to become Force Ghosts.
Yes. Well, and in Qui-Gon's maverick nature allowed him essentially the first one, although probably not the first one, but like the first one of the modern era. And then he could teach it to others.
Yeah. But that's it, right? Like I said, once you realize that it's in religion or however you want to do, right? Once you realize, like you said, with the dogma, you realize all that stuff, then you're able to ascend, right?
To
the next level.
And when you take that even further, what you're saying about Qui-Gon, the other maverick that we have before him is Count Dooku, who I firmly believe radicalized Obi-Wan Kenobi in order to achieve all of his goals, because what do we have now? But we have a confederacy of independent systems running. We have a republic beginning, but it's not really the republic that we know. But they did take down all of Dooku's stated goals in episode 2 came about because of Obi-Wan meddling with Luke Skywalker.
I don't know, you guys. A maverick that shows up and rejects dogma, then after he dies, he comes back and tells people how to find the way. I don't know. I'm not feeling. Okay.
It's all many right. religions, many religions.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Moving on. Question.
Oh, do I get to do my connection?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Did I skip you, Lee? My bad. I jumped in because of Yoda's lightsaber.
That's all right. And we were all commenting on all of these other things. This one was just huge for me. And it's why I think Mando is an amazing character. He had the moment with Ahsoka where he had permission to go and talk to Grogu. And he realized what's best for them. And he was able to walk away. He was able to, with love and attachment, walk away. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you know, Luke is like, you can't do this because it's impossible. And it's like, okay, there is a different way. You know, you can still be in love and have attachment and let people have their own path. And this has been Luke's weakness. You know, if you and let Han and Leia die, if you honor all for the that they've fought for, yes. You know, like Mando is morally, ethically better than Luke has ever been in this moment, even on the same day. So I thought that was a very powerful thing. And like you guys, the seeing the steps that leads to the failure of Luke Skywalker, I think is brilliant. I'm one of the guys that loved episode 8. And I loved when you get to a certain age and you've been fighting and you've been following roles and doing that stuff, you get disillusioned. And that's exactly who Luke Skywalker would have been at that stage in his life. So I love that. I love this, the breadcrumbs that we're seeing too.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Question 4. This is where we do the customized questions. Did Cad Bane ever work for the Empire? We heard him say with such disdain to Cobb Vanth, Boba Fett is a cold-blooded killer, and he worked for the Empire. That was a terrible Cad Bane, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Nathan, did Cad Bane ever work for the Empire? Yes or no, or something else?
All right, well, there's certainly a couple of different ways to look at this. It is possible that he's not quite lying to Cobb Vanth, but just, you know, omitting certain details, and maybe he did work for the Empire and just didn't point that out. But I think it's actually more likely that he did not. He worked directly for Darth Sidious in the Clone Wars. He did not work for Palpatine. He doesn't realize that those are the same two people. In fact, at one point he was hired by Darth Tyrannus to kidnap Palpatine. Mm-hmm. He clearly did not know that this is the guy that he has been working for. So he never worked for the Republic. He probably never worked for the Empire because he sees the Empire as a continuation of the Republic. Palpatine came out and said, oh, we're reorganizing the Empire, or we're reorganizing the Republic into the First Galactic Empire. He sees them as the same thing. And he never worked with the Republic. Why would he then work with the Empire? He doesn't work with the law. He will shoot the sheriff.
Yes, I did.
So I don't think he ever worked for the Empire. I think that he looks down upon all the bounty hunters who did, even though there are a lot of them. You know, he sees that as his moral high ground, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, Lee.
I was just going to ask a question to Nathan. Who hired Cad Bane and Bad Batch again? Why was he fighting Fennec Shand?
It was one of the Kevin Owens.
Okay.
Because they just wanted to recover their property.
Omega. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's good. I thought it was the Kevin Owens. So, yes, it wouldn't be technically the Empire.
Right. Yeah. That is an important distinction. Two important distinctions there. One, the Kevin Owens were never officially part of the Republic. They were neutral. They just sold clones to a not neutral party, much like the Banking Clan was neutral.
Yeah, or the Trade Federation.
Yeah, the Trade Federation was neutral, but clearly supported one. But also, by that time, the contract was null and void. The Empire had said, we are no longer working with the Kaminoans.
Yeah, and we don't have to honor the Republic's contracts. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it makes more sense that, like, Cad Bane wasn't there in Empire Strikes Back, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yes. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Okay. All right. And in an effort to make sure I don't skip you this time, Lee, did Cad Bane ever work for the Empire?
I think he did. I would say that at the point that we're at in Bad Batch, that the Kaminoans were at least linked to the Empire at that point. And especially as they're kind of downsizing, they were obviously being taken in. You know, the destruction of the facility, the removal of all the data. Was it... was it Lamassu that went along to Mount Tantus at the end?
She survived. Yeah. She was the only one that survived.
So they were at least tangentially, but also bounty hunters, you know, go after bounties, and the most bounties are actually government issued, at least in the U.S. Otherwise, you're a hitman, which she obviously is too. But if you're paying the bills, you take the government bounties.
Okay. All right. Derek, did Cad Bane work for the Empire?
I mean, I think we kind of hit it with Nathan's. I mean, there's a possibility of Lee's point, but I think there's enough within the syndicates and all the underworld that he didn't need to, that he kind of was the top dog amongst all the syndicates, right? So if you had, you know, five or six crime lord bosses, you know, willing to pay him, right, for those types of things that Lee talked about, you know, the hits and everything, you know, the contracts, I think there wasn't a need for him to technically go work for the Empire. Even though, like we talked about, he technically did at points in time for the guy that actually ends up running the Empire. But, you know, did he actually sign on the dotted line that said, you know, to be paid by the Empire? Probably not then. So he can have that. But it's all kind of wishy-washy.
It's a bunch of wibbly-wombly bounty hunter-y stuff. I'm going to agree with Lee. I think that Cad Bane did work for the Empire by virtue of he has probably taken a contract from a regional governor. And as Tarkin explains to us in A New Hope, regional governors are now the extension of the Emperor's will out and amongst the people because there is no more Galactic Senate. And so I think that Cad Bane's got to pay the bills, like Lee said. So if he goes and brings in a guy who's a bail jumper, whom assigned that bail to the guy? Well, it was some imperial judge, because that's the law of the land. Unless Cad Bane has spent all of his time out in the unknown regions in the Outer Rim and whatnot, in areas where the Empire has no sway, and he's making his money that way. But I don't think he's been doing that all this time. I think he has worked for a regional governor at some point, and therefore worked for the Empire.
Plus, how big are the bounties going to be on the rebels during the war?
Oh my gosh,
that's got to be a cash cow.
Huge amount of money. Okay, fifth and final question for this segment in this episode. What will Grogu's choice be between the Beskar shirt or Yoda's lightsaber? You going back to Mando or are you staying at the Jedi school? Derek, what do you think?
Well, if they want to get the easiest way, he obviously picks the Beskar suit, because then one, he goes back to Mando. They can now add Grogu to Mando season 3, season 4, season 5. And then theoretically it makes the most sense that he wouldn't get killed when Solo Ben goes bad. But at the end of the day, again, I don't like the character and what he's done for Mando, because I think at this point Lee brought really good attention to it, where Mando can walk away from it, right? So what's that going to do to Mando's character if Grogu now shows back up? And I think we've come to the point where I think it'd be better off, where again, we don't have that. At least my personal opinion. Like I said, I love Baby Yoda for what he's done. He's helped unite Star Wars fans across, and he's, you know, Mando in the sense has done a lot of that too. So I don't want to discredit anything with that, but again, I'm just done with the baby Grogu stuff. I'm you know, want to move on. It's cool to see Luke, but you know, with that, but I actually want to see more Luke, right? Because at the end of the day, Grogu never shows up in the sequel trilogy. So for the fact that he actually might die, I'm okay with that.
I
mean, that to me makes it even more chilling for what Ben Solo then does, right? And then all the stuff that we talked about. That is why Luke becomes the Luke in The Last Jedi. And to me, that would be perfect.
Lee, what do you think? What's Grogu going to pick?
I would like it to be the armor. If only for the reasons I mentioned. Like, the way of the Mandalorian is one of service to others and dedication to others, but being allowed to be your own thing. And it was given freely as his right. And it's like Mando is saying, you can be a Jedi and you can have this too. There's no attachment to, you know, you can choose to follow the creed as I have, you know, or you, and you know, he is going back. And again, I still don't really have a problem with the creed. But Luke is kind of using this thing like you can, I will let you have my knowledge and this experience, and I will guide you in this birthright that you have of the Force, but only if you reject the person that saved you. Mm-hmm. And only if you reject, you know, like all of this, like this is somebody who was hired to bring you back, who risked his life, who lost family to save you, to bring you to me.
Right.
And to like do that to somebody that has been traumatized, you know, I mean, he's seeing the trauma that's going on in his life. Like, but there's also, there is a moment in this one that reminded me of a part of the first season of Mando when Grogu is crushing the little, whatchamacallit, training droid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's got this little angry face on him.
Yeah.
And he's also got the angry face when he's choking out Gina Carano.
Uh-huh.
And I think there is some darkness in Grogu. And if there's darkness in Grogu, I will be happy to see him go for that lightsaber. Because this is very reminiscent of a scene in Lone Wolf and Cub that they actually reference in the Kill Bill Volume 2. They put a pen and a sword in front of a baby. And it's like, okay, make your choice, and this is going to dominate your destiny. Do I pick the weapon that is used to kill people, or do I pick the armor that is used to protect me?
Ooh.
And we think of the Jedi as the good guys. He is choosing something that is only meant to kill people. That's what a lightsaber is for. Yes, you can deflect blaster bolts. Guess where those blaster bolts go? Or you can use this armor that has kept Mando alive when he was not the best fighter, when he was outnumbered, when he was able, you know. And I think that if either choice could be really good from a dramatic perspective, if they do it right. But if they make it just like feel good, like Grogu, so good to see you. The Mithril looks great on you. You know, it's not going to be as good. But if they let Grogu as a character go dark, or Grogu as a character recognize the, we're talking about the dogmatic nature, the hypocrisy of the Jedi. If Grogu realizing that the Jedi have already failed him, mm-hmm. and he goes to Mando of a wise way, I think that's great. But if he goes back because I miss Space Daddy, or if he stays with Luke Skywalker because I'm supposed to be a Jedi and Jedi are good and Mando, you know, whatever. I just want a good, well thought out reason for either one. But I think we all know that it's going to be the armor.
Space Daddy, epic band name alert. All right, Nathan, what do you think? What's Grogu going to pick here?
Secret option number 3, choke out Luke, take them both, run.
Become his own bounty hunter.
Exactly, yeah. Be your own bounty hunter, armed with a lightsaber. It'll be great. No, I agree that he is most likely going to take the chainmail. It just makes sense from a storytelling perspective. It's a way to get him back to Din so that he can be in future seasons of The Mandalorian. Sorry, Derek, I think that's going to happen.
Yeah,
it gets him away from the temple so that he doesn't die there. And, you know, people would go ballistic if he died in the temple.
But it would make Kylo cooler, though.
It would.
And it would make Ben Solo's redemption have a lot more weight. It's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, we had to forgive him for killing Grogu.
But the thing that really makes me think that he's going to go for the armor and not the lightsaber is the fact that Luke helped him remember Order 66. And one of the last things that he saw was the Jedi standing in front of him with their lightsabers ignited and falling to the clone troopers.
Yeah.
So I think he's got a lot of trauma wrapped up in lightsabers, particularly green lightsabers, well, green and blue, because that's what he saw last in that very traumatic moment. So I think for that reason, the lightsaber is not as tempting an offer to Grogu as Luke might think that it actually is.
So if it was Mace Windu's lightsaber, would have been okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, but an interesting point. But we go ahead and say, but I have a point on Yoda's lightsaber, too.
I was just going to point out two things. A, I'm hoping that's Syndralic, that they we see in the middle of the trio of Jedi. It probably isn't, because we do see him in a cutscene get cut down by Anakin. But I just want to make sure that he's dead, because that's played by Nick Gillard, who is one of the worst fight choreographers of all time. His fights in the prequel trilogy, he had half of a good one that wasn't because Ray Park was in it. He is horrible. Also, go ahead and watch that scene again, and you will see why the reverse grip with a sword is stupid. He died holding the sword behind him in an awesome dramatic pose that gave him no defense. He deserved to get shot.
Heads up, Ahsoka. Stop holding your lightsaber like that.
Yes.
But it put the lightsaber front and center for Grogu, thus increasing the connection between the lightsaber and the trauma for Grogu.
For me, I am going to sort of steal a page out of Nathan's answer. I am going with secret option number 3, but on the for real, though, not choking out Luke, but finding some way to convince Luke that Grogu should have both, because having both Beskar armor and a lightsaber was mentioned in last episode when Paz Vizsla talked about, help me, Nathan, Tar Vizsla.
The original Mandalorian Jedi.
The original Mandalorian Jedi, creator of the Darksaber, et cetera, et cetera. Dude Man had Beskar and a lightsaber. So not only is it possible, has happened, is very famous amongst the Mandalorians, but we had it mentioned in this very series. So there is a small hint foreshadowing Grogu's going to do both, lightsaber and Beskar. I'm going to start calling it Mithril by mistake all the time now. So yeah, he could do both. I don't know how he's going to convince Luke to let him do that, but maybe he's going to, you know, reverse the mind link and remind Luke about how when Yoda gave him a choice, if you leave now, help them you could, but blah, 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 stay here or go help your friends. And he's going to essentially be like, Luke, you can't make me make this choice the way that you had to. I'm going to take both of those things and go help Space Daddy, thank you, Lee. Go help Space Daddy to save his friends, and then I'll come back and finish what I have started, right? Okay? And Luke's going to be all like, I know how that goes. By the time you come back, I'll be... Oh, wait.
Oh, well. I realize that the Mandalorians, as we see them now, are the dwarves of Erebor?
Uh-huh.
You got the one that has to go back to the long forgotten kingdom to reclaim his heritage. Uh-huh. We've got the two that we meet, you know, the Balin and Dwalin, you know, you got the short one and the huge one, you know, there's 11 artisans. More,
yeah,
Ori, Dori, artisans. Nori, Biff and Buffer, Bumber, Oin, Goin, Philly, Killy, and Thorin. Yes.
And Grogu is Bilbo. That's why he has, yep.
And Ahsoka is Gandalf.
Yeah. Ahsoka is Gandalf. She even has a staff in the Rebels scenes in the future. Come on, guys. And you know, George is not upset about this, because Lucas often mentioned that Tolkien was an inspiration. As well, he should be, because the guy was a master storyteller. Okay. All right. Excellent discussions. We're going to jump into some Star Wars news. But first, we're going to take a quick break so that you can all hear about all of the other great shows that we have right here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Kevin. And I am going to mosey on over to the bar here on Tatooine at Mos Espa and see what Star Wars rumors I can dig up. All right, this episode I am drinking a bit of a knockoff product. I enjoy Mountain Dew's Game Fuel, but it's way too expensive. So I found this thing called Gridlock over at Aldi, budget grocer. It tastes almost exactly the same, and it is a mere 69 cents. So if you guys out there
good number.
Yeah, that's right. If you guys out there like Mountain Dew Game Fuel, but it's too expensive, give this Gridlock drink a try. It's not too bad. Well, there's only one Star Wars rumor to speak of this week that the bartender told me about that. Derek, we actually saw this come by in the Facebook group for What a Piece of Junk. So I'll let you take it away to let us know the update here.
Yeah, so comicbook.com posted a reportedly Andor is renewed for season two, which is obviously at this point in time has not been premiered. So, you know, what does that mean, right? And we get to see an interview done with Stellan Skarsgård in his hometown, which we're not going to try pronouncing,
right?
Swedish language, where he talks a little bit about, you know, that he's obviously doing some filming. And then in the autumn, they're going to be doing some second season of the Star Wars series for Andor. And then we're trying to like, okay, what does that mean, right? Because it's even in the English translation, it's kind of broken up. So a couple of things it's noted. First off, obviously Disney hasn't confirmed this. It seems a little odd that he'd be breaking this news. So we know that for sure Andor is supposed to be 12 episodes. And at this point, outside of Clone Wars and Bad Batch, we haven't gotten anything over 8. We've gotten 2 seasons of Mandalorian at 8. We have had, obviously, Book of Boba is going to be 7 with the conclusion next week. And we also know Obi-Wan, I think, was 6 episodes, or is it 8 episodes?
Rumored to be 6, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. First off, it could be that they're actually going to break up this full season of Andor, because they did get a good enough footage, right? It's not like maybe every episode will be an hour, right? Not where some episodes are 30 minutes. So rather than try to run 12 hours straight, that they'll go ahead and break it up into 2 6-parters, which would be cool, right? Because, I mean, that obviously helps break it up a little bit, and it's not all on one stream. Or there is legitimacy that there is going to be a bit more with this, or whether or not it's necessarily Andor's a season 2, maybe they're going to do prequels of our other characters. You know, we definitely need some stuff for Baze and Chirrut. We've talked about that for the Guardian of the Willis. That's what we really want. So, but yeah, if we don't get, you know, but anyways, I mean, I love Diego Luna and I love the Andor and K2SO. So how much ever we get more of them, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm going to put this one firmly in the category of rumor, real close to leaning toward that mistranslation thing. And I think what you interpreted was correct there, Derek. This is actually Skarsgård trying to say we're going to have like a second half of the season, not season 2, because it seems so weird for that to be already decided. And I'm not even sure that they have a second season for Andor planned. You know, it feels like Book of Boba Fett is just sort of an extension or interlude for The Mandalorian. So I don't think we're going to have like a season 2 of the Book of Boba Fett. I could be wrong, of course, but I think this is very much a case of mistranslation, or, you know, the writer got it wrong or whatnot. And it's just basically you know, breaking the first season into two halves. It's not like a streaming series hasn't already done this with, they still call it season one, but not all the episodes are available all at the same time. You have to wait an extended period between, you know, episode three and episode four or something like that. Nathan, what do you think?
Well, given my fluency in the Swedish language, I have no idea because I have no such fluency. I would wager a guess that it is a matter of him saying we're coming back to film the second half rather than the second season. As you mentioned, plenty of shows do that now. Right now I'm watching Young Justice. It's in season four. And right now we're in that in-between time. Half of the episodes for season four have dropped and we're waiting on when the other half will start up. Then that's going to be a while longer. So I think it's going to be something similar to that, where we get maybe the first six episodes sometime this year and we finish it out sometime next year, but it'll officially be one season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. Lee, you have some experience with Scandinavian languages. Do you think that perhaps this has been misinterpreted?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hello. Snog. I can understand
Swedish. Hold on. I've lost the universal translator. 3PO, get that thing back online.
Oh, goodness gracious me. I think it was a misspoke. I think that we would have heard something about filming season two if it was happening. I don't think that I think there would have been a set photo. I think there would have been something else crazy going on long before this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone would be surprised if it got a second season. I'd also think nobody would be surprised if it didn't, because we have a narrow time frame for him to play this character in any meaningful way for the actor. You know, you could go back a few years, something like that, but I don't think there's a much that needs to be done. And I feel like it's sort of like Rogue One. It can be a self-contained story and be magnificent. It might not even need to have anything else crazy going on with it. All I want is just some Jan Denana. You know, he was just kind of forgotten. Like, that was the coolest of all the generals we had, you know? Like, Crix Madine, forget about him. Who cares about General Rykien? Give me some Tendadana, y'all.
I need some more Raddus.
Oh, yes, Admiral Raddus.
Crix Madine reference.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, that's pretty much it for the whole Star Wars news and rumors this week. So, but don't worry, fans, we haven't forgotten about the audience participation part of the show. So, guys, let's square up and head toward the ring as we get ready for a little Star Wars Smackdown. Cool. So the winning poll option for the most recent Star Wars Smackdown is Wedge Antilles versus Poe Dameron in their X-Wings. So guys, put on your starfighter knowledge thinking caps, or perhaps fighter helmets, and we can talk a little bit about what it means to fly an X-Wing and who does it better, either OG Rogue Squadron guy Wedge or the new blood Poe Dameron. Derek, I'm going to start with you. What do you think? Who wins this in their X-Wings?
First question, though, is who are the droids that are accompanying them?
Oh, excellent question. Let's assume that they have their usual counterpart. So for Poe, that'll be BB-8. And then somebody who has more knowledge of the old expanded universe can talk about, did Wedge have a signature astromech?
I was going to say, because he never got to fly with R2.
Right.
So who did he? That's what I'm trying to remember, who he flew with. So,
he had one from the Rogue Squadron, but I can't remember who.
That's what I'm trying to remember. It's been so long.
All right. While you okay. pontificate.
Anyways, regardless, to me,
yeah, you choose close, Scott.
At that point, it's two main characters versus one side character, so it's got to be Poe and BB-8. They're going to win, right? So, but
R5G8.
I thought it was an R5.
Yeah.
So. Anyway,
that is the extent of my knowledge of R5G8. Just the name.
But, and are we getting Poe in his black one, or are we getting him in the non-black one X-Wing?
Either way, it's going to be in a T-70. So
no. We know, because it's got a bit more customization on the black one.
Well, that's I'd true. Imagine. Well, I mean, if we're going to say that Wedge gets to fly red three, which he should, then yeah, Poe gets to fly black one. So, I don't even know Poe's call sign in that orange X-wing.
He just comes in the last minute, right? So
I think his call sign is still black one.
Okay.
Because the call signs, it's a little weird. The call signs at some point seem like they're tied to specific starfighters, and at other times, like
specific people.
People, yeah.
So, anyways, so sorry for the listeners, but obviously this detail matters, right? I mean, us nerds have to know this stuff.
Totally.
If it's going to be in their signature X-wings with their appropriate droids, and I mean, and if can we at least go into R5 G8 with his extended universe knowledge? I'm going to go with Wedge then.
Okay.
And obviously, we're assuming this is Prime Wedge too, not Old Man Wedge that shows up.
Not Wedge from Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. As with the mano a mano fights in Star Wars SmackDown, it's you at your prime. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go with Wedge. I think Wedge is obviously got, moves named after him, Wedge, right? You know, we got the curly and slip and everything else. So I think overall, I'd rather have to go with Wedge. I think he's just a better expert pilot. I'm sure all the stuff that Poe knows how to fly, because I don't know enough about Poe's background. I think he just learned everything from Wedge's handbooks. So... and I would imagine that Wedge is, probably written plenty of handbooks, but didn't write everything, right? You know, as we talk about, the master doesn't teach everything to the student. So I'm going to go with Wedge.
Okay, cool. Nathan, what are your thoughts about this matchup?
Well, I think to really analyze this matchup, we have to go into some of the Legends material.
Sure.
Because Wedge Antilles had a whole lot of material that got cut. The entire X-Wing series, basically, as well as one of my favorites, the Rogue Squadron video games, in which Wedge Antilles rescues a defector from the Empire, one General Crix Madine. We worked in
Crix Madine references in the same podcast.
Yep.
Right now he's getting a royalty check for like 64 cents.
Yep.
He almost has enough to buy a gridlock.
64 cents. I didn't know we were paying him that much. Never mind. Get us 17 thing.
I'm about to go back and edit this part out. Scrub.
But in all seriousness, when you're playing those video games, you are the best pilot out there. You take out tons and tons of enemy fighters, which is not terribly realistic. In real life, you're lucky if you take out one or two enemy fighters in a career.
Right.
It's Wedge. So he's better than luck. He can take out a whole lot of TIE fighters. But there was one scene in The Force Awakens where Poe takes out 10 TIE fighters in a row outside of Maz's castle. I counted them. Because that was the one scene that took me out of the movie while I was watching it in the theater. Because the maneuvers that he pulls off, I'm like, that should kill somebody. The G-forces alone should kill somebody. Somehow it didn't. So between that maneuver and the fact that he's flying a T-70 and not a T-65, he does have a slight technological advantage. I'm going to go with Poe Dameron. But if we consider all the legend stuff, I think it's close. But Poe's got the edge.
Okay. All right. Lee, what do you think?
I think that there's no question it's Poe. Just from what we've seen the characters do on screen, Wedge has done nothing that compares to any bit of piloting that we've seen Poe do. The 10 in a row that he did, in outside of Maz's castle, and then also taking out ground targets with pinpoint accuracy, really maneuvering that X-Wing, I know it took you out of the movie, but if we're looking at the piloting skills, really the best piloting we see in the series. Nobody else is doing anything like that. Only one coming close really is Anakin at a certain point. I will say that if you put him in equal ships, I think, is the only fair way to do it. Because, I mean, if you're taking a 30-year-old car, you know, versus, you know, a modern car.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a little bit unfair. You know, we all know that BB-8 is a hero droid and all that. Here's the other thing I'll say, though. The battle at the end of the Rise of Skywalker, they didn't have Wedge flying. They had him in a gunner pod. So, now, all respect to Wedge Antilles, he's the only one that flew both Death Stars and the Battle of Hoth, you know, and he survived all of it. So, I mean, dude's got some props.
Actually, before we even get to the Battle of Hoth, he's the only one who flew the two Death Stars.
Yeah. And he helped take both of them out. And to Derek's point, Poe did learn those moves, but that's how growth happens. You know, when I'm training my fighters, you know, I keep telling them over and over, it's like, I don't want you to be as good as me. I want you to be better. I want this to, you know, grow and continue to grow. And it's, you know, if you look at dunking in basketball, I mean, you start really with Wilt the Stilt and Dr. J. Then you get like your Dominique Wilkins and you get Michael Jordan and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, you get Shaq. And then it comes to a point where it's not even uncommon to see what was unreal a few generations ago. So I think, you know, I think Poe has the edge because he has Wedge's book and all of his own experience.
As the master, you want to be what they grow beyond.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Another line that I love from episode 8.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree with everything that Lee and Nathan have to say here, but I'm going to have to go with Derek on this one. I think Wedge is going to win because, one, he's got tricks that he didn't write down. Two, I think he is better at defense than Poe is, evidenced by the fact that at the Battle of Yavin, yes, he survived. We've talked about that. He survived the first run on the Death Star, one of only a few handful of pilots to do that. But that means, you guys, that Darth Vader didn't kill him. I'm not going to say couldn't kill him because he wasn't necessarily gunning for Wedge, but also Wedge was in a battle with Darth Vader and lived. You have to be almost a prophesied hero to pull that off, right? Now let's talk about some expanded universe stuff for just a quick minute. Real quick, I don't want to get into too many details, but Wedge was in charge of Rogue Squadron. Poe was in charge of Black Squadron. We see Wedge survive and accomplish his missions, but keep his squad alive and intact and in tip-top fighting shape. We watch Poe Dameron get too focused on personal glory and have the men under and women under his command get killed off. That is a big, big downvote for Poe's abilities. Hang on, I'll get there, Lee. And so I think that not only surviving a fight that involved Vader, keeping his squad mates alive, and being able to fight in different tactical ways. And then finally, we look at Poe's accomplishment at Starkiller Base, where he flew into the reactor chamber and blew up the thing, and that was amazing. The rest of the team with him in that battle were like, nobody can pull that off. But then Wedge had done that a generation before when he and Lando Calrissian and Nine Nub flew their ships into the center of Death Star 2, of course, and pretty much did the same thing, you know, in an even more confined space that was a longer journey because they had more superstructure to go through than Poe did at Starkiller Base. So I'm going to give the edge to Wedge. Hey, that rhymes. And say that he's going to be able to outdo Poe Dameron for those reasons that I just laid out. Most of all, he's going to be able to understand when to hold back and be more defensive than Poe is when he's almost always offensive. All right, Lee, you have a caveat here.
I will say that it was a very good thing that Poe disobeyed orders and went after the Dreadnought because the Resistance would not have survived with the Planet Killer weapon. Those guns. That battle would have been completely different. By taking that out, the Resistance was allowed to survive. They had to go to the planet to try to get into the base. They would have just pulverized them from space with the Dreadnought. So that one saved the Resistance.
No. The Resistance was going to be saved in The Last Jedi after Poe and BB-8 had done their distraction move with the booster rocket that Lieutenant Connix and friends had installed on Black One for that purpose. Whereas if he when they were ready to leave and General Leia said, come on back, let's get out of here, they could have left at that time and taken all those bombers with them. But instead, they lost all those bombers. And that was not worth the price of one Dreadnought.
And they would have lost. No, the Dreadnought would have taken out the entire fleet.
long before they ever got to the planet.
It would have bombarded their stronghold from orbit.
Yeah, the fleet wouldn't have survived those guns.
No, I don't think so. I think that their shield was strong enough to repel that. And if they had their, this is the whole reason Leia was upset with Poe. Those losses were not worth the trade with the Dreadnought.
They even called the Dreadnought a planet killer, though.
If Captain Kennedy had scrambled his fighters when he wanted to, instead of listening to General Hux, none of it would have mattered. They wouldn't have been able to destroy the Dreadnought.
So Hux is the hero.
He's
the one that let him survive. So yeah,
I was not expecting it to go that way, but yes.
Well, both of those are examples, though, of the young people not listening to the wisdom of the elders. In that case, Kennedy should have been listened to over Hux, and Leia should have been listened to over Poe. Poe even has to turn off the radio to ignore her and do what he wants. That's not the right play, anyway. That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but there's our predictions. So an uncharacteristic split because normally we only have three responses, but still. Excellent debate, guys. And if you have a Star Wars SmackDown matchup that you want to see us talk about, please submit it to any of our ways that you have to contact us. And of course, keep an eye out on the Facebook group for the next poll. Derek.
So one last question before we close out here, Scott. So predictions for next episode.
Okay. Yes, predictions for Chapter 7, the finale. Yes, we've seen the penultimate episode. Time for the ultimate episode. You guys know that I have my crazy prediction. I'm going to go first with the prediction here. I think that Boba Fett will end up getting the Darksaber, and he will take it back to Mandalore, and he'll be the guy to get Mandalorian society back on track, and whereas Din will continue to be a bounty hunter so he can go off and finish his adventures with Mandalorian Season 3. So I think that at some point we're going to have Din versus Cad Bane. Cad Bane is going to get the upper hand somehow, and without killing Din, he's going to defeat him, take the Darksaber, and then Boba Fett will come and fight Cad Bane and take the Darksaber from him. Killing Cad Bane. I think Cad Bane will get killed in next week's episode by Boba Fett. Nathan, prediction.
All right, so a couple of predictions. One, there is a old story about how Boba Fett got the dent in his helmet, and that was with the duel with Cad Bane. That was slated for a Clone Wars episode and never happened. I think we're going to get that duel in this episode. I think it'll be a little similar to what you said. Boba Fett will win, but he'll, get shot and it'll do some damage to the armor. But I think they will actually refer back to the unaired duel. I think it did happen. We just didn't see it on screen. Mm. So I think they've already got some.
So we get another flashback?
Yes. Yeah.
Or maybe just a line.
I also predict that we will see Boba Fett riding a frickin' Rancor, because they can't tease that and then not give it to us.
Chekhov's Rancor.
Plus, we did see Omega riding Mochi at one point. Mm-hmm. So we know that the Jango clones like riding Rancors. Those are my two big predictions. But I do want to key off of one thing that you mentioned. You predicted that Boba Fett would end up with the Darksaber. I'm predicting that Grogu ends up with the Darksaber somehow. Hmm. And this may be long time in the future, but I think this could be part of him picking the armor and not Yoda's lightsaber. He could still end up with a lightsaber, but it'd be the Darksaber.
Okay. All right, cool. Derek, your prediction for Chapter 7.
I think yours is way too early, Scott, on your prediction. I think Season 3 of Mandalorian is going to be the entire Mandalore, background that we're going to get with Bo-Katan. And I think that's going to be – I think for that to happen, Din has to have the Darksaber still. I don't think that can happen just yet for Boba Fett to do it, because I think we will get more Boba Fett, because I think at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, Boba Fett will take, we'll get the Darksaber. But I just think that's too much to all happen in the season one or final episode here, as well as we haven't gotten season 3, which I think, like I said, is going to be the restoration of Mandalore. But I do like, obviously, hopefully we do see the Rancor and Boba on it. That'll be fun. Again, I keep making references to the, you know, Red Dawn, and I think that's what we'll get here, the rise of Rohan. And so I think, you know, we'll
Wolverines!
Get
obviously
wrong Red Dawn, but good idea. Yeah.
The Red Sun Rises. There we go. But yeah, I think, you know, we'll get, I hope we get the Jawas and the Sandcrawler coming out with the Krayt Dragon Skull leading the charge.
That was so cool.
And we'll get even the repair droids coming out with Amy Sedaris's character there, with Peli. And then we'll obviously get Cobb Vanth and all the townspeople will be the Eagles at the end coming in to save at the last minute band, because there's just going to be so many Pikes and probably one of those families that we talked about that will betray Boba. Yeah. So there'll be, you know, it'll be the battle of 5 or 10 armies or something like that. So, and we probably will still get one really cool cameo, whether that's Luke and Grogu showing up to doing some really cool Jedi stuff, or if we do get the Harrison Ford Han Solo. And obviously I'm hoping we'll get some really cool Black Chrysanthemum action. That's Kira, really what I want.
Kira.
Yeah, we could still get the Kira thing too, but they didn't do anything with the Sophie Thatcher character, so it's kind of like, okay, whatever. So, but yeah, I wouldn't surprise if we end up getting something. But see, Kira doesn't deal anything with the Pikes. That's my problem. I was hoping that we get more Crimson Dawn. So there's a chance that she might show up because she's Crimson Dawn and the Crimson Dawn hate the Pikes, right?
Kira would be a setup for season 2. After the Pikes fall, Crimson Dawn comes in and says, ah, now we can move in on this territory.
So there's a chance for that too. So, but yeah, I think there's going to be a lot. Obviously, I think this is going to be an hour-long episode. But I think it's going to try to do its best to wrap up everything. But yes, lead to a season 2 Boba Fett and lead us into season 3 of Mandalorian.
Cool. All right. Lee, as our special guest, you get the final prediction for chapter 7.
Well, I mean, pretty much everything you guys have said are things like I'm kind of hoping and praying for. And the one thing I've noticed with Boba Fett is we get that, but they take a right turn. So I'm expecting a weird right turn. I'm kind of expecting somehow Cobb Vanth to get armor. In some way, I'm expecting Boba to get a ship, perhaps Slave 1, if Din Djarin to get a ship. If Boba is going to be the daimyo of Tatooine, he doesn't need the Firespray gunship, and he doesn't need the armor. And I think that so much of this series has been about him reclaiming himself and like realizing what is and isn't part of his life, and so much of the difference between Boba and Din has been the armor. Mm-hmm. I think that Boba can walk away from it. And I think that in gratitude to Cobb Vanth, he gets armor. Maybe he just gets it somehow. Just that line kind of stuck with me from this week's episode. How have you been? More cautious. You know?
Or Cad Bane tells him you shouldn't have given up the armor.
Yeah.
But I feel... there's got to be a good cameo coming in. I'm really hoping for like Dengar, Zuckuss, and Forlom. And I know that Simon Pegg has been playing Dengar in the animated series, but tell me, wouldn't Harvey Keitel be perfect? Wouldn't
oh my
that be
gosh.
Like the best Dengar possible?
That would be awesome. That would be
no
awesome.
Idea. Who is this? Sorry.
You don't know Harvey Keitel? Or...
Look, If they aren't already in Star Wars, I probably don't know them.
Yeah,
Nathan Winston doesn't really Wolf do well in Pulp Fiction.
I don't think Nathan's seen Pulp
Winston
Fiction.
Wolf. You said in the wolf? That's all you had to say.
I have seen Pulp Fiction. I'm not recalling that section.
He's the guy that helps him figure out what to do with the dead body.
Oh, okay.
He's
okay.
The cleaner.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's a cool prediction, Lee. I'd love to see some of the other bounty hunters show up. That would be amazing. Well, you can be guaranteed that if any of those things or whatever else happens on chapter 7 of the Book of Boba Fett, we will be talking about it right here on What a Piece of Junk. In fact, next Sunday night, as we go over the finale, we are going to be doing it live, baby. So please make sure to keep an eye out for those links on social media and join us for the live broadcast. And speaking of social media, Lee, where can people find you out there on social media?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Way of the Way. Look me up by my name, Lee Fillingsness, on Facebook. I'm somewhat active, I guess, these days. So, yeah.
Cool beans. Derek, where can folks find you on social media?
You can find me running the What a Piece of Junk Star Wars podcast Facebook group under my real name, Derek Marsh. And then you can also find me a little bit on Twitter at HoodieDM83. Nathan, where can the listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Gooey Chewy. That's GOOEYCHEWIE. I still feel the need to spell it out, even though you can see it on the screen. or you can find me on Facebook at Nathan Miracle. Like I said last week, there's not too many of us. You can probably find me. I'm the one with the hat. Scott, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at ScotticusMax. I am on Facebook under my real name, Scott Baltman, and I do write my own science fiction novel, so please check out my author website at writegreatscott.com. But until next episode, we want to encourage everybody out there to reach out to us and tell us what you think, what we can change, what you like, what you don't like about the show. Please also always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.